Hey folks, you're listening to a special 9-part series on gender, gender politics, and gender equality. Obviously, you can do what you'd like in terms of how you listen to them, but I've designed these to be listened to in order. Each episode builds on the last one in a logical way. Think of it like you'd think of a book. If you take things out of order, a lot of it is going to be hard to understand or just seem off. So if you've just stumbled into this episode, please go back to the start. Otherwise, thanks for listening to everything in order. Let's get into it. For this episode, I would love to talk about toxic masculinity.
Yippee!
Which I think,
fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, it sort of sounds like a bit of a bummer of a topic, but I actually think it's super fun. I think it's a really significant piece in us answering the question around why we're not making more progress around our gender goals as a community. And I think it's also a really significant piece in as we step towards creating a better world, like a more peaceful, collaborative, human-loving and all-species-loving world. And so most of what we're going to be talking about today is around where toxic masculinity comes from, just to give you a bit of a plot structure. So let's just like start briefly with what it means. My understanding of it is that it's often used incorrectly to essentially say that masculinity itself or that men are toxic. So often you'll see an example of, like, let's say bad male behavior, then someone will roll their eyes and go, huh, toxic masculinity. And when you're listening to that, it's often like the commenter or the person is talking about the specific man and just saying, ah, men are toxic and, you know, what are you going to do kind of thing. I don't believe that that is its real meaning. It's more to say that men or maleness or masculinity, whatever you want to refer to that as, or yang energy, sorry, I'm trying to be diverse and inclusive, is not necessarily toxic, but something that happens to people that are born male, something happens that imbues some of them with what you might regard as a toxic expression of behavior or of masculinity. I guess you might say, like, it exists in opposition to, I mean, you never really hear the phrase positive masculinity, but that would be the logical opposite of toxic masculinity. And I guess positive masculinity would be gentle, respectful people, emotionally articulate, caring, pro-social, justice-oriented, self-aware, aware of power dynamics and privilege, and non-violent.
Would you say able to celebrate their manness, not at the detriment of others?
Yeah, I would say that. I would say that's a very positive quality of, like, whoever we're talking about, like, and whatever genders we're talking about. I think, yeah, I would say that's an extremely positive quality to be able to have, like, pride and self-worth in oneself, not at the expense of anyone else. Mm. Love that. Mm. The psychology community, I think, seems to be moving in the direction of saying, like, actual proper evil people, like full-on psychopaths, are an incredibly small number of people. Like, you know, whatever you want to, 1 in 10,000, 1 in 1,000,000, whatever number you want to pick, it's a very small number of people. The rest of men folk are not born to be evil, but yeah, something happens along the way, which, as we've discussed, as we all know, men exhibit a lot of negative behavior. So those sorts of things that happen as men grow up, or the stuff that boys and men are socialized towards, is stuff around not being able to admit they need help or to admit that they're wrong and to lean instead towards bravado. And we value that in our men folk, and we reward them and we socialize them towards that. We don't expect from them much in the way of emotional literacy. And as a result, they're more likely to act out. Funny little like sidebar on that. Women are more likely to act in, whereas men are more likely to act out. So you tend to see more in the way of depression statistics for girls and young women, whereas you see more in the way of crime and violence statistics for men. But arguably, it's the same set of problems expressed according to our socialization. As a result of socialization, men folk are less skilled at talking things through. I think that's partly a reflection of much of their experience is of being sort of pushed around and dominated rather than collaborated with and communicated with. And so that's what they tend to also then repeat out into the world. They tend to have barriers towards seeking help. And that's sometimes met by the providers of help. So it could be argued that a lot of the social work sector is mostly geared towards providing services and quality of life for women folk rather than men. And about 80% of counsellors and psychologists are female, and also about 80% of clients are female. So that whole sector and world of supports is more geared towards women folk. And I guess like side note on that, I've been studying psychology for about 25 years, and it varies a lot from teacher to teacher. I haven't studied at a formal university. I haven't done like 4 years of dense training. I've done part-time study whilst being a formal student for 10 years. It's been sort of more like self-paced part-time study. And so experience is very wildly and widely depending on the tutor. But sometimes I've come out of workshops and or seminars, trainings, whatever, and just gone to compare notes with other people around, just going, was that horrible? Like, were male presenting people, or were men just like basically taken the piss out of for the entire 2 day experience or something like that? And yeah, it's a really common experience. And I know plenty of men who have left that sector or really struggled with their training in that sector because they just feel like they're laughing stock.
The butt of jokes.
The butt of jokes. Whilst also many of those usual dynamics are in play, that we've still got the thing where a lot of management and leadership positions are mostly male. So you still get much more in the way of books and presentations and public face being like male faces. But yeah.
Interestingly, at a psychiatrist level, it's more heavily men.
Okay.
More men are psychiatrists. Like I just had a quick look at the Australian Government Department of Health Psychiatry, it's a 2016 fact sheet, and they're 61% of clinicians are male. And the average age is 54.
And I guess that would fit, yeah, so my training is in the counselling and psychotherapist world. Isn't that a fascinating little indicator of like socialisation? Because psychiatrists are so much more about diagnosis and treatment and medicines.
Yeah, the technicalities and the more hard-nosed elements.
Yeah, and not so much about bedside manner.
Yes, not.
You know, you can be a psychiatrist and have had no bedside training, bedside manner training.
Sad.
That doesn't surprise me. Because it's a focus on data and facts.
Yeah. I had to do 350 hours of supervised practice of me with a client, and also I think 150 hours of my own therapy as part of my course. So, yeah, counselling and psychology. Sorry, yeah. Yeah, psychiatry. Very different. Yeah. Men folk are socialised somewhere along the line, or it works out somewhere along the line, that they have less or no intimate friends. These are all obviously hideous, gross generalizations, and there will be massive exceptions. There will be men that have got tons of friends and women that have got very few. But as a rule, Men have got less friends and so less supports. And something also happens to men at work. And I know that by the time that men get to the workplace, I mean, the socialization process goes on forever, but obviously we're no longer talking about children and young adults. But yeah, something else happens at work, which I would describe as saying it's horrible. You get used, abused, spat out. I know that as women have come into the workplace, there's almost a sense sometimes that the nastiness of the workplace is something which is only turned on for them as part of our hatred of women. I think it's a surprise to learn that actually they've been mostly repulsive the entire time, and men have just been tolerating it and forbearing it. And it's possible workplaces are in some ways actually this is feels like it's a it's out of might be getting a bit out of range. I was going to say feels like maybe possibly in some ways even workplaces might even be a little gentler on women, if only because male bosses want to get in their pants and therefore be seen to be nice to them. But you know, that's a plus and a minus, let's face it.
I think what you were talking about of the outward facing, inward facing plays out a lot here. So I think, and again, gross generalization, when we're talking workplaces being horrible, it's a bit more overt. When women are horrible in the workplace, it's a lot more covert. It's
Right.
nowhere near as
Yeah, a lot more sneak.
obvious, a lot more sneaky. So, but what has happened is as women join a workforce, men are reined in that behavior. So, and I've seen it, I've worked in a quite male-dominated industry for a long period of time, and I've been in various bits of that which were even worse. And I've seen it reined in more when more women join teams, join leadership, etc., that it shifts.
Right. Gotcha. Makes sense. So, as a consequence, when you receive more violence and when that violence is sort of normalized or ignored, and when you have less in the way of personal and professional supports, so less supportive friends and a sector which is not so supportive, and when you yourself have less processing skills, then it's not rocket science to go that person is going to wind up being more toxic as a person in the future. Also, yeah, more likely to be stubborn and closed-minded, more likely to be operating in a world of bullying or being bullied, and just, yeah, generally toxic conduct, so behavior, crimes, addictions, and selfish behaviors rather than pro-social behaviors. So that's a kind of a quick little like intro or primer to the concept of toxic masculinity. In general, when we're talking about toxic masculinity, credit often goes to patriarchy for creating it. Specifically, like examples are often cited is that in a world of colonizing takeovers and empire building, which is just classic patriarchy pranks, you need soldiers. And you need men to be soldiers, and you sure as shit don't want them having emotions or communication skills or empowerment.
Or questioning anything.
You want them angry, and you want them to hate the other side. You need to spend decades enculturating them into that. So there's that, and then also arguably, yeah, the workplace itself. Obviously, it's a more our workplaces, thank God, are more nuanced and mixed now, but historically we've needed workers who will take on dangerous, uncomfortable, life-threatening jobs. Funny little side note here. When we're talking about the patriarchy, we often talk about it in terms of that patriarchy looks after the needs of men. But it's funny when we're talking about toxic masculinity, we point out that patriarchy actually creates toxic men. And I just want to point out, you actually can't have it both ways.
Yeah, I think patriarchy, contrary to popular spouting of beliefs, patriarchy isn't really good for anyone.
Yeah, agreed. So yeah, and so I
That's
think this.
actually, just before you go with that though, that's actually quite interesting. I think just recently when we were in France, there was a winery called Le Patriarche, and it was like they were proud, like they were trying to say, yeah, Patriarch, yay. And they were saying, you know, the history of the men and the wine and all this thing. But the thing that I did think with that is like there is a concept or an element to the good old onion that a patriarch could, should, whatever, be the protector, the provider. Like there is a concept that it's there for the goodness of us all. You know, the outcomes haven't often been that, and we've probably all suffered in various different ways from patriarchal stuff. But I think it's actually important that I try and remind myself that it isn't intrinsically bad. Like it isn't.
Almost like men themselves.
I know, weird. I don't know.
Yeah, I love what you're saying. There's almost like two really distinct layers to this because it can. I don't think about this much, but you're right. I can think about, and it hasn't really existed in my family structure or my cultural history, but I can imagine a version of a patriarchy, which is like a honourable handing down of skills and a bringing of the boys through rituals and marking of rites and occasions and celebrations, and also honorably keeping each other in line, you know, not like a whack over the head, just like a hey, we need to talk. I can imagine that, and I can imagine all of that done in a way which is not against the women who are doing their own stream of that. Personally, if I was to create a culture, obviously I would ban gender outright, so all of this would be done with everyone together. But you're right, I can imagine a beautiful, sacred version of that, and I want to think about yeah, cultures other than my own white, you know, European, United Kingdom colonizing kind of history. But yeah,
You
and
know
then
that there's a benevolent benefactor kind of element.
right,
And
yeah.
I think just listening to us all now, and knowing my history of referring or thinking to referring to the word or of patriarchy, it's normally like bad, bad, bad. And yet maybe that's us getting ourselves into this very same trap.
So, two thoughts on that is we don't tag the same or ew to, I can't remember how to say the female,
Matriarchy.
matriarchy. We don't. So that absolutely goes to what you're saying, Emma, is that we've loaded this word up with a negative connotation. And the example that you're thinking about, Rog, I believe our own indigenous culture actually does something like what you're talking about. So they have their own councils and ways of dealing, and they are quite gender broken down. So, and they deal with that within their own communities in ways which are about restitution, not retribution and punishment necessarily.
Nice, nice, nice nuancing. I think the piece about that toxic masculinity comes from patriarchy has some truth in it, in that if, as a male type person, you show vulnerability or feelings, gentleness or sexuality, like it's often other men that will pull you into line. It's the patriarchy itself that will bring you into line, right down to doing so with threats or actual violence. And also, if we're talking about the negative side of the patriarchy, as opposed to the really quite beautiful little bubble that we just went off in a moment ago, that nasty system of power structures and dominating leadership, it rewards and it also depends on toxic masculinity. It depends on men folk who are not in touch with their feeling side. Hey, I hope you're enjoying the series. I do this for the love of it, but there is something I'd like your help with. I'd love it if you can share this with someone. At some stage during this series, when someone comes to mind that might be interested, please go right ahead and click the share button. I'm aware that in some circles this can be pretty contentious material, so here's a tip. You don't have to say, "Hey, I love this, you will too." You can just say, There's some food for thought here, or something similarly ambiguous and non-committal. It's all good. So yeah, at some stage during this series, please share it with someone. Now, back to the content. So the general philosophy is that men are probably not born toxic, but that something happens to them. And in general, we attribute this to the patriarchy. And most of us as individuals, certainly speaking from within my community, actually, I think it's a pretty common mainstream value. Most of us are very up with these days with the concept of we need to be careful on how we bring up our boys. We're getting smarter around not telling them to man up when they have feelings and stuff. And most of us have got some clues around that. But here's where we start to get a little more interesting, I think. I want to propose that patriarchal model is an ingredient in toxic masculinity, but it is definitely no longer the only ingredient, and I would say it's not even the biggest one anymore. The biggest source is us.
Us, as in humans?
Our community. Yes. Yeah, our culture, our community. Yeah. I'll expand a little bit. I think I need to justify a statement like that.
Well, everyone sits there thumping their heads going, no, it's not me, it's not me.
I'm pretty sure I have in my own way at various times. So
I absolutely 100% totally promise I have been responsible for contributing to toxic masculinity whilst simultaneously being opposed to it. So one of the most core elements of toxic masculinity is the inability to be vulnerable or to admit you're struggling and to ask for help. And if we have a little bit of a think about what happens to men at the moment when they do this, especially if they do it as a group or if they do it in a structural way, so if our men folk bond together and say, hey gang, we're struggling, we need help, we need resources, we need care, we need your attention, we need help, then a few things are likely to happen. Firstly, we collectively as a culture, we are likely to shut them down extremely quickly and extremely hard by saying things like, sure, we'll get to that once we've fixed the real problems, or by saying stuff like, stop mansplaining to me about gender, or by saying stuff like, don't you ever use the word sexism regarding yourself. There is no such thing as sexism against men. Or just to imply that the person talking is ill-informed about gender issues, or that they're stupid, or that they're misogynistic. So people often assume a two-party game where you're either on one side or the other side. And if you're speaking for men's issues, then you must hate women, or you must be unaware of women's issues or something like that. So the debate is a forced polarization happens. So that's the ways we shut men down when they speak up. Another thing we do is we gaslight them.
You think you've got problems. I mean, look at mine.
Bingo. Yeah.
Nothing's wrong with you. Nothing's wrong with your life. I mean, God, you should try being a woman.
Beautiful. Well played, sir. Have you thought about joining the patriarchy?
I'm a leader.
Yeah, I love it. Another thing we'll say is, oh, look at the poor little entitled man who's already got everything and wants to have more. Or as a popular speaker to this topic, I'm not going to name names, but as someone who I wound up, they said something on their podcast, their very popular podcast, which irked me. And I wound up because they're a connection of mine, I wound up in a conversation. And essentially, this was a much shortened version, but essentially I was saying, look, how much have you actually looked into men's issues before you said, you know, the comment you said? And what they said back, and I am quoting word for word now, I don't need to look into men's issues to know that there are no men's issues.
Unless the sentence that follows is because they're all people issues, that's not good.
Yes. So I think most people don't say it quite that crudely, but I think that perspective actually represents a lot of people, particularly people in the gender movement, but just most people in the mainstream at the moment. We will also victim blame men or groups of men that speak up. So we will say something like, well, you created these problems, so you sort them out. I know from personal experience, the conversation will almost always deteriorate into body shaming and jokes about my dick, the size of my dick.
Yes.
Otherwise known as sexual harassment, just for the listener following along at home. And we will also isolate or cancel the person that speaks up, the man that speaks up about men's issues. I think women get more latitude, but
Yes. I think I can speak up about men's issues actually better than you can, for example, because I'm like viewed as saying it with a bit of a, oh, well, I can give them a concession by talking about it or whatever. Like I get more permission than to talk about men's issues than men do, which is another part of the puzzle.
Which historically tracks when we've talked about female issues. Men talking about female issues also get heard more than historically for a very long time than women talking about women's issues. So we don't seem to listen when somebody says, hey, things are bad for me because of this demographic. It doesn't really matter what the demographic is until someone outside that says, yeah, actually, that's a bit shit, and acknowledges that. We don't, as a society, we're really bad at listening to the people who are most affected. We need somebody else to tell us first.
Yeah, nice. And sometimes, like one of the ways that we can use our privilege everywhere, all over the place, is to speak on behalf of people who don't have that same privilege and therefore access to that same group of people. So,
Absolutely.
as white people, or white-looking presenting people, it is about a trillion times easier for us, for me, I'll speak personally, to speak to issues of race, especially to other white people, than it is for say, people of color or people of Asian appearance or whatever.
It's like we need to make room at the table by
Yeah.
inviting them to the table, not the, the reverse, which is just people taking their place at a table. It's like we need to make the room and make the place in the first place.
Yeah, love it. Also, where I thought you were about to go, Inga, was we're socialized, and certain groups are allowed to talk about certain things. And when what you're talking about aligns with what your group is meant to be talking about, you can basically say whatever you want and you can have the floor. So let's talk about for a second the male dominated spaces. Like, you know, this is shifting, but it's still definitely the case that if one is male and one wants to talk about politics or business or finances or cars or football, apparently, I wouldn't know anything about that. Various other male-related topics, it's much easier for you to do so. You're going to have much more freedom there. If you were to talk about stuff that is more classically the female domain, so babies, families, etc., then it's much easier for you to do that. And this whole topic around gender and equality and privilege and who's got what is much more something we're used to having women folk speak about. So you've got much more latitude. So it sort of fits in that
Yeah, it
socialization.
does. Also, people listen to people who are like them.
Yeah.
Right.
We have some unconscious biases,
Right.
which means we put more weight and connect more with people who look and sound like us.
Right, yes. And we're doing an episode very soon on some of the drawbacks of gender-specific spaces, which includes the inherent problems of only ever talking about this stuff with people like us, and how strange it is when someone outside of that speaks up. So, when men folk speak up, we'll shut them down, we'll gaslight them, we'll victim blame them, we'll body shame them, and we will isolate them and cancellate them. Cancellate them.
Yeah.
I'm going to stay with that.
Yeah, I'm into cancellation.
And so in general, the message is very clear, and the message is man up. Shut the fuck up, get over it. It's just that it's done on a broader cultural large scale. And we don't use those exact two words of man up because most of us are smart enough now to know that that's bad.
Get to not get caught saying that.
Yeah. And so as the man type person who is speaking up in the first place, your options are to fall into line and make sure you never speak up again about that topic. Like as soon as that cancellation threat is dangled, You learn to fall into line and never speak up again. You will probably start to overcompensate by actively showing that you also hate men. And one of the great ways you can do that is to be the one doing the cancelling. So, my strongest, most passionate critics who have just gone for my throat with just vengeance and hatred for speaking to these topics, they've often been men. Because it's just the whole scapegoating thing to make sure that the group continues to accept you. From time to time, you need to kick someone outside of the group, and the more active you are in kicking someone out, if so long as that move is successful, then your position within the group is solidified for a long period to come.
More secure, yeah.
Still going back to like if you're the person speaking up and you've gone through that treatment, you can hope that the original feelings just go away. And you can also hope that the part of that which is frankly anger at the way you've been treated also just goes away, but hint, it doesn't. So in short, you wind up ironically picking up just another form of toxic masculinity. It's actually almost no different to the if it was the case that patriarchy were the originators of toxic masculinity. What you wind up in the current context is just exactly the same. You want to shut up, not admit that you've got vulnerabilities, not ask for help, and not speak with any sense of pride or care for yourself or your gender.
Sad.
So we as a people may not be the patriarchy, but we have picked up where the patriarchy left off, and we are doing their bidding far more effectively than they did. Actually, I'll take that last bit back. I'll just leave it at we are doing their bidding, and we're doing it very well. I think we are actually our own worst enemy. I know we're not meaning to. I don't know why we have the reactions we do, but we are creating the men that will be making life difficult for ourselves and future generations by coming down so strongly anytime anyone speaks up on behalf of men. So that's why you might have heard me say from time to time that I think one of the most radical things you can do these days is to care about everyone and their issues. And that's why I personally regard myself as pan-political, which is to say that on a good day, I will care about and I will go into bat for the issues that affect all genders. People sometimes ask me if I'm a kind of a men's movement kind of a person, and fuck no, I'm not. I think that's just a repetition of the problem. I'm pan-political.
Extremists of any description don't tend to get good outcomes.
Oh.
They get publicity, but they don't get good outcomes.
Yeah, nice. And I think that when you care about everyone, you are actually very actively undermining patriarchy. So, yay. Fuck patriarchy. That's a powerful move. And you are undermining the creation of toxic masculinity. Like, it's amazing. Just showing that you care is how you undermine that mechanism.
In my experience, the people who've been socialized as men in my life, when they've been given the opportunity to be heard, particularly regarding relationship stuff and past relationship stuff, have been really surprised that I am interested to listen to that with a like, actually, you've been treated like shit before, and that's not okay. You actually deserve to be treated like a human, and that's all.
I always feel like I've got a really short amount of rope to play on. Like, if I can bring up a topic, generally speaking, around something to do with what we're talking about, I feel like I've got an incredibly short amount of time that I'm allowed to speak into that topic too. And there's an incredibly small number of times per month or per year or whatever that I can bring up something that might look like a men's issue. And it is just so the opposite with anything that looks like a women's or a minority gender issue. I can just like bang into that and talk about it forever. No one will ever stop me. Facebook is a great spot for it. It's so I find when I'm motivated to write about something which you might regard as a woman's issue, I find it unbelievably easy to write because I'm speaking to an audience that is already well aware of the issues and which has no resistance. But then if I want to write about something which you might regard as a men's type of an issue,
so much harder to write because I've got so much more psychological barrier going on, and I know that if I get one word wrong, I'm dead.
It's interesting. I don't know whether you follow the Australian Research and Space Exploration, ARS, Space Australia. It's worth a look. So they have Barry from Support, who quite frequently actually talks about men's issues and making sure that you're okay and have you got someone to talk to. And they cop a lot of flack and they still keep doing it. So in amongst all of the funny shit that they also boast, but it's a really good example of no, actually it's important and we're going to talk about it. Are you okay? Are you men okay? Do you have someone to talk to? Here are some things you can do if you need to reach out to people. So
Nice.
it's a good example of somebody that something that's, extensively just a piss take, but is actually taking it seriously and not stopping, even though they get some flack on that. It's definitely worth a look.
Oh, nice. Thanks for that. I know that at this point in the conversation, so some folks will say something along the lines of, like, it's not that I like I don't hate men. You can't call me a man hater. I just don't need to have any interest in men's issues. And that's like a pretty common line that people will say. But it's a really fun one to gender flip. Like, if I was to say, oh yeah, sure, no, it's not that I hate women. I just refuse to get any knowledge of women's issues. Would you take me seriously for a second?
I'd hope you were dating men. That's a good point.
Yes.
That's a good one. I was wondering earlier when we started this, I thought, oh, does anyone ever use the term toxic femininity?
Yes.
Oh yeah, okay. I'm not in that space,
You'll need to seek it out. As a general
but yeah.
rule, no, it's not.
Yeah.
But yeah, like if you look around, and I guess it's a little of what maybe Inga was hinting at before around like the type of social violence that can happen in workplaces, maybe. Like some people would say, like, toxic masculinity looks like a punch in the face. Toxic femininity looks like talk behind your back. One of them is actually more damaging, and one of them is more obvious. But
It plays out a lot in family life too. So you talk about the matriarchy type structures in family. You'll find, a patriarchy in a family doesn't get away with being abusive anymore. You have that toxic head of in a matriarchy type situation in a family, and everybody will be toe the line.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
right. The needling or the undermining and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, right.
Totally. The straight out just dissing someone. Oh, it's okay because they're the head of the family and you should just take that. Like if that was a man saying that, there's no way that would fly anymore. So yeah, that's where I see it play out, is it's much more accepted in a family dynamic, weirdly.
And I definitely see it. I just guess I don't hear the term toxic femininity or toxic feminine very much at all. Whereas toxic masculinity, I think one of the other hiccups is it's got quite a catchy kind of name. And you go, oh, look, there's a toxic ma masculine example, and it's maybe even seen as more, politically correct or clever, rather than saying, oh, that guy's being an asshole, it's a catchier thing, and it makes you sound like, oh, I'm so amazing because I'm talking about the toxic masculine because I'm so amazing, and it, I don't know, I think that probably actually leads into more toxic femininity, probably.
I think I'm like, yeah, so that phrase exists, but you won't hear about it in the mainstream, and you won't come across it generally on your Facebook feed. Likewise, another good one is mansplaining versus femsplaining. And I think the reason you don't hear the feminine of those terms is because, frankly, they sound repulsive. Like, they sound to me like misogyny. They just sound like you're having a laugh and taking the piss and sticking the knife in whilst criticizing someone. And that is exactly how I feel about those words in reverse. It's just that we don't, as part of our toxicity towards masculinity, we don't feel them as words that have sting to them, or and we think that there is no th such thing as sexism against men. So therefore, it's fine for us to go to town with the language we use.
Yeah, it's sad.
Um, I want to pull myself up on something that I just caught myself doing a couple of minutes ago, Emma, when you asked about toxic femininity. I got really excited, and I would have almost, to the lay observer, looked like I was happy and excited about the topic, and I'm not. It's just I'm happy and excited to be talking about the topics and to be getting into the nuance, and I would hate for that to come across as me getting a joy from, like, the revenge or something like that.
I was thinking that just before when we or I laughed at something, which isn't funny at all. It's bloody tragic.
Yeah.
But I think we're just kind of laughing at it because, A, it's good that we're diving in, and B, like, at some points, God, what else do you do than laugh and sit here and cry on the podcast?
Yep.
No, I can't stand it anymore. No, that doesn't make for such a good, no, not as useful a podcast.
I don't know. We could try it. So I think that when we look more into men's issues, and when we admit that there's more going on than just privilege, we create spaces for the answers to those problems. And I know it feels like we are yielding or giving up the attention from women's issues. I know it feels like it's a zero-sum game where we've got a limited amount of tension to solve the problems that women face. And if we start letting in the problems that men face, it feels like there's less space overall or something like that, like your intention. So I know that for a lot of people it's very counterintuitive. But I guess the reason I'm so excited about this, and maybe why I'm, like, sometimes even laughing with joy at talking about this stuff, is because I think the moment we talk about the problems that men face and we stop talking about them just as being privilege, suddenly we've got all the answers. Like, suddenly we've got something we can work with. Whereas the other way around, all you can do is throw your arms up in the air and go, what are you going to do? But when we go, yeah, actually the solution to bad male behavior is to take the things that happen to them seriously and to care and to not dismiss them and to not collectively say, shut up and man up, then it's as simple as that. I love the concept of talking about the two-way process of swapping privilege. So I think what's been happening so far is women, starting in the sort of the movement of feminism from, like, the 1950s to the 1970s, give or take, looked at the privileges that men have. So workplace, finances, public life, politics, economics, and said, we would like access to that. And that is super important, and the gods know that I'm 100% in support of that. But I think it's a two-way street, and as we were discussing so much more on the episode of privilege, we need to look at the privileges that women have and say, yeah, we need two-way access to that as well. And when we do so, like, what we're bringing in from women folk or the way women are socialized is psychological privileges, communication skills, friendship circles, support circles, emotional fluidity, vulnerability, the ability to ask for help. When we look at them as privileges and import them towards menfolk, we've pretty much solved toxic masculinity.
Mm. Yeah.
We also solve some issues in the workplace. Because then women don't need to show up like men historically to get further in the workplace if men are also embracing things that are traditionally like a woman in the workplace, then all of a sudden, they get more support, but also it's more familiar an environment anyway and less actually toxic to work in for everyone. So it actually becomes more accessible if workplaces care about people.
Oh, 100% agree.
Etc. It's so odd. I'm like, did I just say that? Yeah, okay, fair enough. I might be living in a fantasy land, but that's all right. But yeah, it actually becomes more accessible and more sustainable for everyone.
Nice. And bizarrely, I even think that even if someone only cares about women, so say someone is of the perspective of going, yeah, right, you guys are banging on about some really interesting stuff, but ultimately, I only care about women. Ironically, it's still advantageous to allow some space for what's going on in the male camp, because that's how those problems are going to solve. Like, you know, the problems that women face, They're more, it's more complicated than this, but to grossly oversimplify it, those problems come from men. So we've got to look at what's causing those problems. And maybe the Me Too movement is a great little example of how that started and how that then played out and how we then sort of undermined ourselves. So I've forgotten their name. Or I think it's her name. I've forgotten her name. The person that first came up with the hashtag MeToo and that movement, in her words, I'm paraphrasing, but I'm confident, I'm highly confident with my the gist of what I'm saying. She said the purpose of that movement was to draw attention to the fact that 1 in 4 women and 1 in 6 men have been sexually assaulted. Over the course of the next sort of 12 months or something, it was pulled back to just being about women, not by her, but by the movement that then took off. And I mean, I know that I spoke up in the early days to say, yeah, me too, because I've been sexually assaulted. And wow, I was lambasted for it. I was told in no uncertain terms that I had no right to speak to this topic. Mm. So it was pulled back to being just about women. And I get the mentality of what's going on there. Which is a sort of a sense that if we leave that open to be about everyone, then we're losing funding and we're losing support services for women, which just hurts on some level. But the problem is that means that when we put the focus only on what happens to women, we're taking services and support away from men. So, and when men can't work through what's happened to them and when it's normalized and when they don't have support, that's the next generation of rapists.
I'm quite interested in this because I opted for purposely not joining the Me Too movement, even though I have very big trauma and abuse situations having happened multiple times in my life. And I purposely went, I'm not going to join on this, because already by the time I was sort of thinking, oh yeah, like this is important to me, and it was actually so important that I didn't join it, because I didn't want it to become, because it already had escalated into basically a man-hating adventure, and I thought that's actually not going to help the circumstance. Now maybe I'm wrong, maybe it did, but personally it was so important to me that I didn't join it, because of the way it was socially turning into just a total man-hating fest. And I just thought that's going to make it worse. I mean, maybe it didn't. I hope it didn't. I hope I was misguided in that. But yeah, it was a weird time for me. I'm going, wow, this has been rife throughout my life in various ways and in drastic ways. And I'm not going to speak to it because I'm concerned that it's just being used as a hate tool.
Wow. I'm sorry and thank you.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. I used it as an opportunity to have conversations with people. I didn't advertise it or anything like that, or put it on my Facebook or anything like that. And I adjusted some of my close family kind of relationships at the same time. Because of what was going on, because it was very, very visible and everywhere. You really couldn't get away from it. But I took the opportunity to have the conversations with close people, which included, AMAB-type people, so assigned male at birth people who may or may not identify as men now. And I think almost without exception, they also had their own stories.
Mm.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah. Intense.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, I don't recommend going on a 2-month trip by yourself while you're processing that. It's a way to do it, but it wouldn't be my favorite way to do that. You might need support while you do that. So
10 out of 10 do not recommend.
No. No, the van is good, but it's not that therapeutic. So,
thank you for those stories.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying the series. I do this for the love of it, but there is something I'd like your help with. I'd love it if you can share this with someone. At some stage during this series, when someone comes to mind that might be interested, please go right ahead and click the share button. I'm aware that in some circles this can be pretty contentious material, so here's a tip. You don't have to say, "Hey, I love this, you will too." You can just say, "There's some food for thought here," or something similarly ambiguous and non-committal. It's all good. So yeah, at some stage during this series, please share it with someone. Now, back to the content.
Does it feel okay to move on a bit?
Yeah, okay. Good.
I've got two other fun ways to look at this. Like that's most of the chunk of the theory. But yeah, two other fun ways to look at this. One is as a toxic masculinity as a parenting style. And the other one is the concept of picking up your inner feminine. So first I want to talk about it. So just talk about the parenting style. So if you zoom out and if you see that we are all parents to each other and to like younger people, but we're all constantly parenting each other. We're all constantly pulling each other into line and pulling each other up and giving advice and shaping and steering ourselves. We're all in a parental role, even if we don't have like a direct parent-child relationship going on. At the moment, and this is going to be a gross generalization, but at the moment, the message we're sending to boys and men is that you are not wanted. We don't trust you. We don't care about your alleged needs and concerns. You are dangerous and not welcome in our spaces. We will make jokes about you and ridicule you often, and we expect you to laugh with us. You will not have pride in your identity. And you don't have to be a parental psychologist or a child specialist to know that that is a very toxic parenting style that's going to create very toxic offspring. Like if you imagine a parent,
very broken.
If you imagine a parent saying that to a child, everyone understands.
You'd put him in jail.
We're not even allowed to spank people anymore. I mean, when they're kids. we can't.
We can't spank them in a non-consensual way, is what you
mean. Correct. That's exactly what I mean. So, you know, we've recognized, hey, if we are mean in this way, it's bad. It gets bad outcomes. Like we've recognized that as a society. And that's not like, and that's very minor compared to what we then perpetuate over a lifetime.
Yeah. So like I mean, and perhaps people, some listeners may be thinking, oh, come on, Rog, that's a bit of an exaggeration what you just went through. I've been moderating a forum of 4,000 people for the last whatever number of years. And at some stage towards the end there, I made the rule that you basically can't say those things about men, those things that we would never accept said about women. And it is stunning the number of people that felt that their human rights were being infringed upon because they were no longer able to say those things about men. Mm-hmm. So I just want to remind those people that that's a parenting style. So yeah, we are doing the patriarchy's bidding and we shouldn't be surprised that we're creating bad behavior in men if that's our parenting style. Mm-hmm. Bad data in, bad data out. Shall I move on to picking up your inner feminine?
I'm curious, yeah.
Go on then. I'm not too attached to mine, so go for it.
Okay. I feel like this is phrasing that is maybe getting a little dated now. So this is more like when I was like, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, it was a common refrain, which was like you'd look at men folk and say, you know, go on, get more in touch with your inner feminine or something like that. So in some ways it sort of predates the concept of toxic masculinity. So the pattern I'm about to explain. So I used to do for a short period of time, I thought that being involved with and running men's groups was the right thing for me to do in terms of my contribution. Like I pretty quickly decided not the case, which I'll be exploring more in the topic on gender separate spaces. But I've seen this play out quite a lot in the men's groups that I was involved with. But it's also the same journey that tends to happen to men folk, even just on a solo journey, when on some level the charge is issued or suggested to them that they might want to get more in touch with their inner feminine, and they just meander through their own whatever that path is. The same sort of pattern comes up, which is at some stage you've got to go, okay, so what is feminine? Like, what does that actually mean? And there's the stereotypical classics, which is like, gentler, more nurturing, more caring, more family oriented, more communication skills, more emotionally, blah, 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 blah. Just stereotypical generalist stuff, which is both true. I'm not dismissing it, but these are just such hideous generalizations. What you also come up with, here's where it gets interesting. If you look at what femininity means today and the way it's playing out in culture, it means an expectation or an entitlement to be treated well. It means the ability to compare notes with other people like you and to spot trends. It means the ability to see yourself as a victim and as disadvantaged. It means the ability to identify your lack of privilege, the ways that you don't have privilege. It means to become aware of the patterns of violence that have been used against you. It means to speak up and demand justice for yourself. And it also possibly means, not a hell of a lot of men folk get this, because I think this is a many generations long lesson, but it also means potentially you learn how to speak about yourself from an emotional space rather than a cognitive space or an anger space or an intelligence space. Like to just simply say, I feel blah, 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 rather than you're wrong because blah, 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 blah. So when you look into that stuff and you start to realize those things, it creates an incredible problem. It creates another gender paradox. And you know how much I do love a good gender paradox. Because this is not what women folk had in mind when they said you should go away and get more in touch with your inner feminine. This is not the plan. But it's also perfect because it's true, and men folk do need to get in touch with all of that stuff. So what then tends to happen is that either like individually or as a group, men will then want to speak up. They will do those things that they've just been learning about, which is that they will want to start speaking up about those issues. And when they do so, ironically, it actually demonstrates that they've done a pretty fucking good job of getting in touch with their inner feminine. But unfortunately, what mostly happens is we collectively go back to the toxic masculinity model, which is to say, yeah, shut the fuck up, you have no issues, and get out of the way while we sort out the real problems. So it's very confusing for the men that have actually done a good job of picking up their inner feminine and starting to admit their vulnerability and their needs and ask for help.
I guess we've never told anyone what to do with it afterwards, once you get in touch with it.
Yeah, no, we, yeah. No, we were hoping it would just all go away. I think when we tell men to get more in touch with their feminine, we want them to soften up, but we don't want them to get empowered or something like that. I don't know.
Weird.
I know that when men collectively do that, there's a reaction or a backlash, which often or sometimes looks like just actually closing down men's groups that start to get vocal about their needs. So, I mean, this was ages ago, but laws were made in the United States that said that you cannot have official men's groups on campus at universities for a while back there. And I know also that here in Victoria, Australia, there's been a bit of uproar within this community recently in that the men's shed programs, it's not that they've been closed down or made illegal, it's just that you can't get funding if they're not open to all people.
Well,
So it's actually an area, like it's a piece of confusion, which I think is seriously high risk because as a man that's gone through that process and gotten in touch with, like, I don't think, in the same way that I don't think as a woman, you can be free and liberated and empowered unless you have a reasonably nuanced understanding of the issues that affect you. Like, I think that's fair. I don't think anyone would argue against that. I think exactly the same is true from men. You can't be liberated and free and empowered unless you have an understanding of the issues that affect you. As revolting as it is to look into men's issues. But yeah, once you've actually done that, it's a really high risk area because you can't unsee what you have seen. You can't pretend that that stuff goes away. You can't any longer go along with a one-sided, angry women's movement that just wants to talk about you in a really kind of narrow way, but you sort of have to if you want to keep your friends and your standing. Some of those men wind up orbiting all the way out to the men's movement, to the angry, reactionary pendulum swing parts of the men's movement. I know that some men suicide over this. And I guess also for a minority of people, it works out just fine.
Mm-hmm. See it play out culturally. I work with a lot of people who come from other countries, and once they've had exposure to a more westernized, independent culture, their own different culture, which has, you know, family and a lot more entwined and people up in your business, it really grates. So because they've had that view of what that looks like from the other side, and once you've seen it, you can't go back. So once you've let the genie out of the bottle, you can't go back. So where I'm going with this is, you know, so if we encourage men to look at themselves, their environment, how they're interacting, the inner world, and really get in touch with all of those things that aren't really going so well, but we don't give them the tools to then deal with that and then talk over them when they want to let you know their experience, like they can't just turn it off. They've seen what that looks like and what that could feel like and seen, you know, somewhere they could go that might have more hope than where they are. And to then cut that off is not great. That's what you're saying, isn't it?
Yeah, very agree. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for the reframe. I've got from here a couple of reactions. I want to address a couple of reactions that folks might have at this point in the conversation. So the first reaction would be that the patriarchy has been looking after men since time began, and they sure as hell don't need my support on top of that. So that's like a pretty common reaction. To which I would respond, look, if you've looked into men's issues, you would know that patriarchy hates everyone, mm-hmm. and maybe it particularly hates men. Yes, patriarchy definitely hates women, but it definitely is not there for all men. Patriarchy is there for a very, 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 very small number of patriarchs, and that's it. And yeah, like for sure, most people in positions of leadership and most of the extreme owning class have been men, so patriarchs have been mostly male, but yeah, that doesn't necessarily mean they care about men. They care about themselves, and those patriarchs, they're definitely not putting their love of men ahead of their love of profit. And yeah, just a reminder of that old truth that patriarchy is good for no one. Okay, so still responding to that reaction that, yeah, patriarchy's been looking after men since time began and they definitely don't need my support. I guess I want to talk about the aspect of that around when one doesn't look into men's issues or doesn't have an interest in them, it actually means that the person in question is not informed about gender issues as such. They're just informed about women's and minority issues, which are super important, but it creates a bit of a like a trap or a problem because we often feel like we're informed about gender issues, even though we haven't actually looked into one whole gender. And from there, it becomes a really funny self-fulfilling loop. So if you haven't looked into men's issues, then of course it looks like there aren't any. It's self-fulfilling. It's like it's exactly the same as when people say that we can't use the word sexism to refer to anything that happens to men. And then what do you know? Suddenly it looks like there's no sexism against men. So they're really circular, self-fulfilling arguments, and If we go a step further and we actually frame an interest in men's issues and the speaking up about those issues as a form of misogyny, which people often do, people assume that you either speak for women's issues or you speak for men's issues. When we talk about that as a form of misogyny, I think we're on a really fast track to hell. Because I think labeling something as misogyny or misandry is one of our most powerful tools. Like, it's a really important, powerful tool. And I think when we use it for that, it's stunning how powerful that is in terms of silencing men who would otherwise be speaking up for help and doing exactly what we want them to be doing. So there's a real bind there, there's a real loop. And you can maybe even compare it a little to what things are like in war times. Like, if you go back to the Cold War between Americans and Russians, there was that whole thing around, like, you can't let any information in from the other side. You can't allow anything that sort of humanizes or makes them look like they're nuanced, because we're going to need to be ready to kill them. So it's war talk. It's fabulous. It's a fabulous approach if you want to start a war. But if you're wanting solutions and cooperation and peace, then you need to welcome everyone to the table, and you need to look into the issues, even of those you disagree with.
I don't understand how people can wander around and just completely dismiss very obvious signs that half the population is not having a great time sometimes. Like, even if it's sometimes, even if you're like, well, they have a great time most of the time, so there. I'm like, yeah, but like, are you really that blinkered that you can't see when wives talk over their husbands and take control of things, when you watch sitcom television and men are the butts of, the stupid dad kind of thing, the butts of all of the jokes? Like, are you really, like, how do you not see that the men in your life have problems with relationships and connecting and stuff? Like, are you blind? I really don't understand how that can go under most people's radar. Even on just a human, this human that I am connected to has issues. Like, how do you miss that?
I think, like, I've got a little bit of a guess at this, if I may.
Please.
I think it says a lot about the culture that you've been immersed in. So if the only articles you ever read are describing women as the victims and men as the victors, and the only books you've ever read, and the only stuff that's on your television, and the only stuff that makes it to the news that's ever described in gendered as like gendered issues is when women have been fucked over by men. And if the only stuff that you joke about with your friends, and if the only stuff you see on Facebook, then I think it's actually very easy to get to a point where that's just your only version of reality. And
Like
unless,
country
like,
Victoria. Like, none of this was obvious.
say
Yeah,
more.
country, if you think about country life, then that stoic, man up, get on with it. Like, you got a job to do, shut up and just, hard work's good for you, that kind of stuff. And even I could see what the hell was going on. I didn't have a progressive family or anything.
It's funny you mention about that. I did a in a previous job about 10 to 15 years ago, I did a couple of really embedded projects in country towns where I was like actually out living with the people. It was my job to be doing community engagement essentially. And I was chatting with people, particularly older people. And there was a really interesting form of feminism alive and kicking amongst the op shops and amongst, like, the local neighborhood house group and blah blah blah, which was feminism. It was women saying, yeah, we want access to all of the things and so forth, but it was with more of a warm, caring respect for what the male farmer folk and male country folk were going through, and it wasn't as harsh and dismissive, and frankly I found it a more comfortable environment to be in.
So maybe I'm actually like, I've read that wrong, in that it's actually a bonus. insofar as, yeah, we can do whatever you can do, but we're doing that to help you too. We're not doing it to spite you. We're actually doing it for the good of everyone, not because we're trying to fuck you over, actually, or we think you're evil, but actually you need a hand, dude. Let us help out.
Yeah, or maybe even like we have needs and wants, we're pursuing them, but we also recognize that you do too, and we also recognize that you're working your ass off, something like
Well, yeah.
that. Not too sure. Emma, you were thinking?
Oh, I just was thinking when you were saying the other stuff, I was really, I'd probably get some flack for this in some, not from, maybe not from you, but I hated that Barbie movie. Oh my God. I was so sad that its punchline was, let's have the women manipulate and fuck over the men, and that's the victory march. I'm like, no, oh, you missed the point. I don't know. It made me really sad watching it. And that's all. I just, anyway, and I just, the whole missing the point of well, I remember being brought up relatively feminist, and being, being brought up in the 70s and having the awesome bra burner aunties and stuff, and but then seeing some of the women who go, it should be equal. Men and women should be equal, and all men are fucked. It's like, well, hold on, that doesn't make sense to me, and it's never made sense to me that you can browbash someone while saying that it's got to be like, I don't know,
Yeah.
just floors me all the time still.
I found Barbie was I watched about a half of it and could see where it was sort of going. And like I'm what 51 or 52 or something now, and I just don't need to hear that lesson again. One does need to hear that lesson. One does need to see those stories, hear those themes. One does. It's important. But like I had it at 12 years old, and it's just like repeated every couple of days in my life ever since. And I just don't need to hear it again. And I don't need to be beaten up by it again. There's a limited usefulness in that, to the extent that it's ever useful to do it that way. And
Yeah.
I'm as feminist as fuck.
Yeah.
Just to be clear, like the basics of like
Yeah.
equality of choice and not being judged by gender. I'm feminist as fuck.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Shall I roll on to another reaction that some folks might be having?
Yeah, let's.
So that reaction would be, I'm well informed and I don't need to specifically seek out men's issues. I did gender studies at uni. I read stuff. I don't need to dive into some right-wing Reddit forum just to receive a whole bunch of bias and hatred. So this is like maybe the person you were, the people you were wondering about, Inga. And I guess I would say I question how well informed most folks are, just because we all are living in such incredible bubbles where the information that can get to us is so filtered. But dear listener, here's a quick little test for you. How many articles have you read about women's issues versus men's issues recently? Have you ever read any books exclusively focused on men's issues? And how does that compare to the number of books you've read that are exclusively focused on women's issues? And I don't mean men as described through the lens of how we need to change them to make life better for women. I mean just men on behalf of men, or indeed minority genders. Do you react at Karen jokes as I do? I think Karen jokes are sexist. I don't like them. Do you react to the concept of an old wives' tale? I do. I don't like them. I think they're sexist. Or do you arc up at the concept of women drivers? I do. I think that's sexist. At the same time, how do you feel about dad jokes?
Like obvious jokes? I don't want to call them dad jokes, though.
Obvious jokes is great. Stupid jokes is great. But notice how we're using stupid as a synonym for dad. That's
I'm
the
aware.
bit that I don't like.
I understand.
But people who think that they're well informed about gender issues often just don't clock that one. And will stand for their right to continue describing bad jokes as dad jokes. It doesn't make dads feel any better, just quietly. If you are familiar with what the pay gap might be, are you also familiar with what the workplace death gap is? Have you ever intervened when people like speak disrespectfully towards men? And I'm just sort of assuming that, like most of us, you would if people were speaking disrespectfully towards women. Do you speak about female privilege about as often as you do about male privilege? Can you name any politician ever that has gone into bat for men? And then contrast that with, can you name any, can you think of any that have gone into bat for women's issues or the women's vote?
Just wanting to clarify a point here. People will rightly point out that in politics, men are everywhere, and therefore there's an assumption that men's issues are being addressed, but they're not the same thing. Just because we've got men are dominant in politics, there are more men than women by quite a margin, that doesn't mean that men's issues are being addressed. Said another way, you'll find that if we're looking at, say, the Australian example, most politicians will have a stated policy on women and women's issues and will talk to them from time to time. Almost none of them will have a policy on men or men's issues, and they will certainly never speak up about them in those terms. So despite that, you could argue, and I would agree, that by default, some men's stuff gets addressed by a system that privileges men in certain areas, no question about that. But the point I'm trying to make here is that the issues that negatively impact on men will rarely get addressed and will almost never be addressed as, quote, men's issues, unquote, despite the fact that most of our politicians are, in fact, male.
Can you name the top 10 men's issues as easily as you can name the top 10 women's issues, or even just five? Can you name five men's issues off the top of your head?
Well, I've been listening to your podcast, Rog, so I can.
That's cheating. No, that's great. But that actually leads me up to the last point about, like, dear listener, how did you feel when I and we started this series? Like, when you could see where it was going and the issues we were going to start talking about, did that make you go, yay, this is fabulous? Did you feel mixed, or have you already unsubscribed and have not even made it this far? yeah. So I guess, like, my point is with those questions above, I think that, like, most people think that they've got a pretty broad spread awareness of gender issues, but I think, if I'm being honest, that most people don't. And I think that unless you've really specifically gone looking for issues that affect men, you probably haven't stumbled into them. Whereas, like, speaking for myself, almost all of the media that I am tuned into is like at least background awareness of women's issues, and most of the time they're present and more foreground.
I gotta say, Movember,
yeah,
has been instrumental in helping me engage with people by knowing who is supporting that, because quite often that's linked to men's health.
Yeah,
right. And mental health. So that's a really great way that I've been able to see who's struggling out there, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Nice. Go Movember. And I just want to, before I finish off on that point, I just want to say, for balance and transparency after that little, like, questionnaire test type thing, I find myself in men's circle spaces or men's movement spaces extremely rarely. And I find myself in the company of anyone, men or woman or other, who have little or no awareness of women's issues extremely rarely. But I just want to assure that on those occasions where I do, and where folks start espousing what I would regard as backwards or ill-informed values, or just a lack of awareness, I will always intervene. I'll always speak up. I will always use my position of privilege as a male-presenting person. There's another reaction I want to just address, and then I just want to summarise and we're done. So the last reaction I hear from time to time is a meme which says, what women fear from men is death, and what men fear from women is occasional humiliation.
The exact quote is, men are afraid that women will laugh at them. Women are afraid that men will kill them. And that's generally attributed to author Margaret Atwood.
I've seen that around.
So it's a brilliant example of dismissing men's issues, or just like really effectively undermining and gaslighting. Like that is almost impossible to come back at in the moment. I've always found that one a really difficult one. And I would just like to say, if particularly if you happen to be male, if you've ever put your hand up for funding or attention regarding violence against men or male suicide or equalising health funding for men or getting workplace deaths named as a male issue, not just an issue, then you will know that it is not just about occasional humiliation. It's about death for men as well. So to summarise, toxic masculinity is a way that we socialise and bring up our men folk that causes them to behave in toxic ways to themselves and those around them. Perhaps it began with the patriarchy, but these days we all seem to be very much on board with toxic masculinity. And the main way we do this is with a passionate resistance to caring about men and men's issues. And frankly, a loathing disgust for anyone that speaks up about that. As things stand at the moment, what is it, 2024? I actually think toxic masculinity is going to be getting worse and will do so for at least the next generation or two, because at the moment, I think that the pendulum is still swinging harder and further, away from the favour of men. So I think that things are getting worse. Hilariously, all you need to do to intervene is to care. So, as I say, at the start of this whole series, I mentioned that I identified as pan-political. Inga and Emma, you wouldn't have heard that because I recorded that solo because you didn't need to put up with it. But so this is the reason why. Part the reason I am pan-political and part the reason I care about all gender issues is this is my way of intervening in toxic masculinity and in a not that roundabout way. Addressing the problems that women face, but also the problems that men face and minority genders. Sorry to minority genders, including myself, that you were just an afterthought add-on in that sentence structure. So, yes, fuck the patriarchy. And the biggest resistance is that any attention on men, sorry, the biggest resistance to this concept is that any attention on men detracts attention from women or women's issues. It's such shit. Even if all you care about is women, then you need to have attention on men. I didn't like that last point. I think I'll delete it in the editing. But anyway.
But it is still so relevant that even if one were into women's issues for self-preservation or, to go women's issues are the thing, even from that stance, it's still, if you address men's issues and the things that are impacting men, you're going to fix that problem for women more. Like it's even if you only look at it in terms of self-preservation and and for the bettering of a women's position, you still like it still wins. Like you still, if you address it, it's going to come out better for everybody.
Yeah,
And
even if you're not looking with compassion. Sorry, Emma.
oh, I was just going to say, and yet I know I'm really flummoxed by the, that meme that we just mentioned before of the women are afraid of death from men and men are afraid of being, belittled or something or whatever. And I think it's extremely relevant to know, and to think of, actually, men are dying for this in these problems as well, and it's definitely super important. And I see the strength in that meme, the original way as well, in terms of going to a lot of men. Oh God, actually, yeah, it's not great that, those 15 women got killed on their way to home or whatever. Like that's an important thing to think about, and that meme will smack that in the face a little bit because of its sort of starkness of going, oh well, women are dying and men aren't. But that's pretending that men aren't, which isn't gonna get the issues dealt with. I It would be awesome if there can be two-sided memes that you're able to go, here's this meme and smack it in your face and wow, important. And now let's double that meme and go, actually, also, men are dying and this is a massive problem that needs to be addressed. If we could somehow have a spinning coin meme where you get the smack in the face the first way and then smack you back in the face the other way, all with love and care and kindness to say, it's just, you can't miss these massive parts of the puzzle. Otherwise, it's all going to break.
Well, I think that meme just needs, I love what you're saying. I think that meme just needs to go that little bit further. Like, for one thing, it's framed as, yes, it's a smack in the face. I think it's like ridicule and poking and divisive. And I think there are more gentle and caring ways that it can be expressed. But I think it needs to go a step further to say that, let's talk about the extremes and the men that are just absolutely misogynistic and hateful and dangerous and violent. And let's talk about the men that kill women. So, intimate partner abuse and femicide. Is that the correct word? The killing of a partner. Don't worry about the words. It needs to go a step further to go, what the hell has happened to create that man? Like, what the fuck went on there? Because the answer is not miles and miles of privilege as far as you can see. Yeah, the answer is absolute disaster and mess. Like the history of that person, you don't just arrive at that way of interacting with the world because everything has gone in your favor.
Peachy, yeah.
You've been fucked over and you haven't had any support, and you don't have those female privileges of like processing and blah, blah, blah. So I would kind of go for that meme if it was that extra bit longer
Yeah, for
and softer.
sure. Yeah. Oh, yep. Definitely.
All right, shall we leave toxic masculinity there now that we've solved it?
Yeah, I'm glad we've
Sure.
solved
Good job, team.
Job done.
Well done.
Good.
Hour and a half well spent.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're done with
I
that one.
wondered what I was going to do on a Wednesday night. Thanks.
I've got an afterthought that I'd like to make, or at least a clarification of something regarding toxic masculinity. It's a point I've made throughout the episode, but not as succinctly as I might like. The point I want to make is that as a group, we are sending a confused message or a mixed message to men at the moment. Because on the one hand, we are saying, get in touch with your emotions, get in touch with your vulnerability, stop trying to pretend you've got everything in hand, and ask for help. But on the other hand, when men do these things and ask for help, the response that we collectively give them doesn't always reward them for their efforts. On the contrary, we tell them we'll get to their problems once we've dealt with the real ones. We make jokes about them having a rough time, realizing that they're privileged and are being in the process of being humbled. Or we write them off as some variant of a men's rights activist, and we even eject them from our circles of friends, our community, or our beds. In short, we often wind up sending them back into a mode of toxic masculinity, where they do their best not to notice anything, not to feel anything, and definitely not ask for help with anything. There's one particular response that we give that I'd like to expand on a little more. It's one I've bumped into a few times when I've been talking about the nuance and complexity of privilege, or when I float the idea that it's possible that men are treated badly at times also. The response is something like this: what you're saying is interesting and has some merit. However, as someone that's experienced gendered violence, I need to remain cognizant of that overarching reality. Another version of it is something like this: they're all good points regarding the complexity of privilege, but I can only hear them with the understanding that men have the ultimate privilege in this world and that everything else falls under that. And then one final version of it sounds something like this: as I listen to what you're saying, I hold close to me the memory of all the women that have died at the hands of men throughout time, the ones that have been raped and murdered for their sexuality, for their power, or because some man was drunk or jealous or whatever. Since men have the power to rape and murder, there is no such thing as an open and fair conversation. And to pretend otherwise is to deny what happens to women. These are phenomenally powerful words. I've said it before, and I'll say it again now. I am so sorry for what my people have done to your people. With that acknowledgement, these words are a bit like an ultimate trump card, by which I mean that when they are played into a conversation, it's almost impossible to do anything but be quiet and yield the floor. As responses, they are almost impossible to disagree with, and I personally have never been able to hold my position in the face of these responses. They're powerful because any form of disagreement comes across as if one is saying that one doesn't care about rape and murder, or that one doesn't think that women's issues are important. As a result of that, the only thing I've ever seen happen in a conversation after those words have been played is sort of furious agreement or silence. Here's the problem, though. They are essentially an extreme version of saying, we'll get to your alleged problems once we've dealt with the real ones. Or maybe, brother, you don't know what a real problem is. Which is all another way of saying, man up, shut up, shove your emotions down, and deal with them some other way. There is no space here for your complaining. And of course, when we tell men to man up and or shut up, we often get exactly what we asked for. They do that. They man up, they shut up, and they do it in a traditional, toxic, masculine kind of a way, because that's where we pushed them. That's the option we gave them. So I'm not saying that these lines should never be used, or that there's no truth to them, or that these things should never be spoken of. I'm not even necessarily saying I disagree with them or anything like that. I guess I just want to point out that they are profoundly powerful tools. And while sometimes that is exactly what's needed, I guess I would ask that we be aware that, like any powerful tool, it's tempting to misuse them to simply make sure that particular perspectives or people are not heard from. It's a fine line between the importance of speaking for the ways that we are victims versus using our victimhood rank, if you like, to pattern the conversations around us in ways that we prefer. This then becomes self-reinforcing, because when we look around us, we find that there are no perspectives or people that disagree with us, because they can't. So we wind up in a situation where there are no checks and balances on our way of thinking. Thank you for listening.